This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purzel. A look back in history to the 1937 flood that decimated communities up and down the Ohio and Mississippi rivers. Author David Welke will discuss the flood and its aftermath, which he explores thoroughly in his book, The Thousand-Year Flood, The Ohio-Mississippi Disaster of 1937. That's coming up a bit later here on Cincinnati Edition. But before we get to that on this Friday afternoon, Cincinnati Edition goes to the birds. Here in the studio to discuss birds and bird watching here in the tri-state are Bill Creasy, the chief naturalist and adult program manager at the Cincinnati Nature Center, and Lester Payton, a naturalist at the center. If you have a question about bird watching or about birds you've seen on your feeder, you can call us at 513-419-7100. You can email. The address is talk@wvxu.org. You can post on Facebook, or quite fittingly, you can tweet us at 917WVXU. So welcome to Cincinnati Edition, guys.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Yep.
Well, you know, with the recent weather, there's been a lot of traffic at my bird feeders. Do more birds show up when the weather turns bad?
Definitely. There's, less food available. Snow's covering a lot of the ground and the food sources, so they're going to come into your feeders.
I also noticed, tell me if this is just an old wives' tale, but I have noticed that there's a lot of activity at my bird feeder just before it snows. It's almost as if they watch your doppelganger weather, thing. You know, do you see that if you're watching birds? Do you see that increase in traffic before a weather event, or is that just anecdotal?
No, it definitely happens. The highest count we've ever had for cardinals, just looking out our windows at the feeders, we had 80 cardinals.
Whoa.
And it was just at the end of the day, they were getting ready for the night. There was a snowfall occurring, and they were packing in the food to survive the night. I mean, it takes energy to stay warm, stay alive. And the same thing happens in the morning. If you've had a heavy snowfall, you need to make sure your feeders are full because they're going to come out in high numbers. We had 60 cardinals the other day that the Project Feeder Watch people were looking out and finding those.
Well, there at the Cincinnati Nature Center and some of that old-growth forest and the woods you have around, I guess you have quite a cardinal population. I was happy with the half dozen I saw. Well, and that was only the males. I wasn't even talking the females. Maybe a dozen,
It
goes along. But is our community a good place to go bird watching?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We have lots of great parks and, green space in the city and surrounding the city. Spring Grove is a wonderful place. The Hamilton County Parks, Claremont County Parks, and, of course, the Nature Center.
So. Well, how do the birds differ between these various locations? Because I know if you're packed in a suburb, it might be a little bit less. I have where I live near Batavia, I have the, nice luxury of having about 100 acres around me that is not developed, and like to think I have a few more population. But does that affect the bird population?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Habitat is key for certain species. And one that top of my head is white-crowned sparrow. If you go to the Nature Center at the feeders, you're not going to see white crowns. But at where I live on a farm. There's lots of farmland, lots of scrub shrub, open habitat. And I'll have, 12 white-crowned sparrows come to my feeder. So habitat is key for different species.
Well, I'm not a serious bird watcher, but I watch the birds that put feed out for them as it goes along. But if there was someone who wanted to get started in bird watching, what's the advice you offer them?
Get a feeder up. There's a variety of different seeds. What you don't want to do is succumb to the kind of eye appeal of that mixed seed you might find in a grocery store or a general hardware store. The best seed is a black oil sunflower seed. And, a lot of feed stores do carry that, as well as the Nature Center. And that's just the ideal seed that will feed the largest variety of birds.
Well, I was going to ask, because that was one of my questions coming up in just a bit, was to ask about what kind of feed to give the birds. Because I do notice, especially on feeders hung over concrete or over a deck, that when you get that quote-unquote wild bird mix at the grocery store or the like, well, they pick some out, and there's a lot on the ground that never gets eaten.
Yeah, a lot of that, again, is just eye appeal, and it's seeds that the birds don't eat. So it's a lot of waste. So you do better for your dollar if you go ahead and just get the black oil sunflower.
And why does that benefit the birds? I mean, I know that not all the birds, or are all the birds equipped to be able to crack the sunflower seeds to get to the meat?
I use the black oils, and I strictly use black oils, nothing else. And every I have goldfinches that can crack the seeds. People think, you know, the cardinals are the only ones that can crack the seeds, but I've, you know, goldfinches can do it as well. So it's a good seed, and it works for, you know, all species of birds.
Well, it's fun to watch them grab a bird off the feeder, go flying up to the branch, set it down,
yeah,
and start to
tufted titmice will pick up a seed and take it up to a branch, put it between their feet, and just pound the heck out of it until they break it open, and then to get the meat out of the hole.
That's Lester Payton. He's a naturalist at the Cincinnati Nature Center. Also joining me is the chief naturalist and adult program manager at the center, Bill Creasy. We're talking about bird watching. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing us talk@wvxu.org. Sorry, we're fundraising, and that's the money for contributions there. But if you'd like to make a contribution supporting Cincinnati Edition, that's the number to call. Well, in my hand, I hold the National Audubon Society Field Guide to Birds, Eastern Region, North America. I brought this in. Pete, the producer, laughed at me. He goes, you can get an app for that. What do you recommend for folks when it comes to having a reference to be able to identify birds? You know, old school, hard copy here, or on those mobile devices? What do you like?
Well, I'm old school. I've been at the Nature Center 40 years, so I've got a couple of books that I brought with me, and the Sibley Guide is a little bit better than the Audubon. The Audubon is good, but it's only a photograph, while an illustrator can take and show you the salient parts of that bird to identify it. And the other one is the Peterson Field Guide to Birds. And with Peterson, they use arrows. So you have a lot of the similar-looking birds on the same page, and then the arrows will help you differentiate how's this bird different from the three others or the four others on the same page.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask as well, because when I use this guide, I sometimes have difficulty picking out which kind of sparrow that actually is. And I wanted to say, what is the best and easiest way to identify birds? Because I know the serious bird watchers will go by song, sight, nest, diet, and so much. What do you recommend for beginners especially?
For beginners, I recommend you get together with another bird watcher. I mean, it's, you know, not an unknown hobby, and there are other people that do it. They might keep it kind of quiet and maybe not talk about it in, you know, church or their professional situation. But eventually, if you go to a store to buy some seed, you might find somebody else that's a bird watcher. And there's plenty of other websites where you can, you know, find out who's looking at birds. There is a Cincinnati Bird Club, and we'll give the information to you so you can put that online. But Cincinnati Bird Club has monthly programs and regular outings. And then the Cincinnati Nature Center, of course, has a bird walk every other week and a lot of different programs focusing on birds. And bird watchers are very generous people. They're happy to share their time and share their enthusiasm for watching birds.
And I know, Lester, I was reading your bio, and you said you like those average Joe birds. Average Joe that do it. So what distinguishes an average Joe bird watcher from another bird watcher?
All right. If you on my Twitter feed, my handle is Lame Birder. I don't chase. I don't list. I don't do any of that. And that, you know, if you do, that's fine. But for me, I just like to study the birds around me. Look at the details and really get to know those birds, you know, that come to my feeder that I encounter in the forests. You know, if I run into a rare bird, you know, great. You know, I did chase a snowy owl a couple weeks ago with my children.
Really?
It'd be a great opportunity, you know, for them to see this bird. You know, this is a bird that nests in the Arctic and probably 2,000, 2,500 miles away, you know, this bird came to Ohio. So I thought, you know, I'll take them up there and show them the bird. But normally I don't chase. I just like to bird watch and enjoy and really study what I see.
So people know, chasing doesn't mean he's running after the bird on foot.
No, it's
he's driving to a remote location or whatever to find something rare.
Right, and there's a great movie, The Biggest Year, that just came out with Jack Black and other two well-known people. Great movie. So that's what chasing is. Okay. So having a big year.
Well, we'll talk more about the more serious aspects of bird watching. Cincinnati Edition, talking bird watching, the backyard variety for the moment with Bill Creasy and Lester Payton from the Cincinnati Nature Center. Brooke from Northside with a comment or question. You're on the air, Brooke, and welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, thanks for the show. I have two kind of common questions. One is regarding if you'd say something about water for birds, and that I understand that can be a real problem for them in the winter and the importance of keeping water as opposed to ice available.
Okay, that's I'll begin with water. That was going to be my question too, because actually, my mother asked me the other day, "Don't you have a bird bath out there?" And well, I said, "Mom, 6 degrees outside. Yeah. I know you can get the little heaters that they keep it, but what do you do for water for birds in the winter?"
It's critical for birds to have access to water. You will see them take bites of snow and so forth, so they can melt water for their mouth, but birds' feathers need to be kept clean, so they will actually bathe in a bird bath in very, very cold weather just to make sure their plumage is kept clean, because dirty plumage means that air can't be held against the body that keeps them warm all night, and so that air escapes when the feathers are dirty. So there are a couple of stores here in town, and they do have heated bird baths available.
Yeah, Wild Birds, any of the Wild Bird stores, Wild Birds Unlimited.
And Wild About Birds Wild is About the other Birds. One.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you know you have a water source nearby, whether it might be a pond or a stream. I know where I live, I have a small stream on one side and a larger stream on the other. Does that mean it's less critical for me to be able to put out or have to put out water for the birds?
Sure. If there's a natural availability to moving water, then they can use that as long as it's not some deep river. That's not going to be access. And you'll see that, the edges start to freeze up. I'm just driving over the Little Miami today, I could see the edges starting to freeze up. But if you have a moving stream, that's going to be good for the birds.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the water side of the question. Brooke, you had another question, you said?
Regarding the black oil sunflower seeds. But before that, one aspect of the water that I was wondering about was I had heard that one reason it's so critical to have water as opposed to ice available is the calories that are consumed in finding water sources, which then increases their need for more food when it's less available if they can't find water readily accessible.
Sure. Anytime a bird has to fly in the wintertime, it's using precious resources, precious energy. And one thing with the black oil seed, it's a very, it has a lot of fat. And the metabolism of the bird in the wintertime will change and metabolize that food into fat. And I'm a bird bander, so I've been looking at birds at my feeder. And in the summertime, I'll have cardinals that don't have any fat load on their body. But in the wintertime, they hold a lot of fat in their chest area and their abdomen area, and they use that, at night. So they are relying on those fat loads to keep them, alive, during the night. So anytime you can keep from flushing a bird or having a bird move a long distance, definitely that bird will be in better shape.
And with the black oil sunflower seeds, then, are there seeds that are better for the smaller birds so that they don't have to expend calories jumping up and down trying to break the black oil seeds?
There is a seed that we have at the Nature Center. It's called No Mess Mix, and it actually is black oil sunflower seeds and other seeds that have been dehulled.
It's like feeding your bird caviar, though, so
right.
You have to be prepared for the sticker shock.
Yeah, it's a little more.
Also, for people, who live in an apartment or a condo and they don't want any material falling into the unit below, those seeds that are already out of the hull are very nice, and they no mess mix is just what it says.
Well, thanks for your questions, Brooke. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
You can call and ask your question, too, at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org, post on Facebook, or tweet us at 917-WVXU. And I wanted to ask, talking about the debris, I know that there's a lot of debris. I do black oil sunflower seeds. A lot of whole debris underneath the feeder, around the tree. Is that something that we have to be careful with? Because don't those shells have some toxin in there that can kill the grass underneath the feeder?
They have some natural chemicals in there that prevent other seeds from germinating. So you don't want to put them in your compost pile or anything like that if you want to then recycle that compost. So just, distribute them into the woods or someplace where you aren't going to worry about other things and the chemicals that might result from those hulls.
All right. Kim from Dayton is on the line. Hello, Kim, and welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I had a question about robins. Now, I don't think, do robins eat the sunflower seeds?
No, they don't.
No.
Is there anything we can put out for them? So, because, they're looking for worms, and I saw a whole row of very sad robins the other day. And somebody said, well, you know, ask me what to do. And she has a worm farm. And I said, well, let's put worms out on a cookie sheet. But I didn't know what I could do.
That would be a great idea. I mean, people do have little ceramic dishes that they can buy at a bird supply store, and they put mealworms out, and birds like eastern bluebirds will come in and eat those mealworms. So anything you and your friend can come up with to put real worms out, you might as well try it. But most robins become fruit eaters this time of year. So they're known as a frugivore. And those frugivores go and look for local berries. So you can really meet their need when you do your landscaping and try and plant, you know, shrubs and trees that have a small berried type of fruit. One native is called the winterberry holly. It's a beautiful specimen, but it's a deciduous holly, and so you have these stems of bright red berries. And then the small fruited crabapple trees, those are good for birds to utilize. But cedar waxwings, robins, you know, bluebirds, they survive on fruit during the wintertime.
Okay. Now, I actually did take, I had a grapefruit this morning, so I chopped up the grapefruit and put it underneath where my feeders are this morning. Now, I did notice a squirrel having some grapefruit, but I didn't notice any of the birds. Would the robin swoop down to peck at that, or do I need to get it hanging in the tree? Because I tried that last year, but I think a raccoon got up in the tree and took my little sack of fruit, so... Would anything like that work?
Yeah, when I'm referring to fruit, I really mean berries and small crabs and things like that.
If you don't have those trees planted in your yard, and you do have robins, mockingbirds hanging around, you can buy raisins, grapes, apples as well. I've heard of those species eating those fruits. So that'll help birds in the winter too.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kim. Appreciate your call, too. Cincinnati Edition on 91.7, Talking Birds. Mo from Wyoming, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. What's your question?
How can I increase the diversity of birds that I'm getting? I'm using the black oil, but I get primarily cardinals and house finch. And I know you said habitat's a part of that. Is there any other way to get more chickadees and titmice and... some of the other birds.
Hey, Mo, how are you doing? Yeah, you can use some suet. You can either go to the butcher shop or a lot of times the back of the grocery store by the meat section sell just blocks of raw suet. They also have the suet cakes out, and that'll help birds like the chickadees, all the different woodpeckers, Carolina wrens. You can also put some scratch out, you know, small seed like millet on the ground, even cracked corn for things like the doves and the small sparrow types.
And even peanuts, too. Woodpeckers, chickadees, titmice really dig the peanuts.
So supplement the black oil a little bit.
Just change it up, mix it up a little, yeah.
Great.
Well, thanks for your question, Mo. Greatly appreciate it. Yeah.
And absolutely.
I wanted to talk about the birds. I was keeping track of the birds on my feeder. I have, let me see, I wrote the list down. House finches, gold finches, though they're not very gold this time of year, right? Cardinals, black-capped chickadees, Carolina wrens, nuthatches, titmouses, sparrows, red-bellied woodpecker, downy woodpecker. I see occasionally blue jays, though not around, you know, my feeder, and the red-tailed hawks the vultures, of course, that are hanging around. Is this juncos as well? Mm-hmm. Sometimes a rufous-sided towhee. Is that the right way to say it?
Eastern towhee, yes.
Eastern towhee. Is that pretty much the set of birds that we find in this area? Or, you know, as Mo was trying to attract better, more diversity, you know, is there a larger list that I'm missing out on?
Do you have suet up? I'm curious.
Yes, I do.
Okay, because, you know, that'll bring in even more woodpeckers. I've had a big pileated woodpecker hang upside down, this little tiny suet feeder, just to get the suet in the wintertime. And it's all, again, according to how close you are to another woodlot and what type of habitat, like Lester said, what type of habitat you have around where you live. But you've got a great yard list.
Yeah.
It'd be fun for you to, you know, keep track season to season and see if you can do anything, other types of feed like we just talked about, that would bring additional birds in. It becomes a real hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, there's over 60 million bird watchers in the United States. So that's a lot of people out there having a good time.
What's our fascination with birds? I mean, you know, they're colorful. They're fun to watch. They, you know, have antics. But, you know, what is the attraction for birds for you?
You know, I was pondering that question on the way in, and I don't know. I mean, it's just they're just so full of life. And I think this morning, you know, it was -4. I'm standing in my nice warm kitchen with my cup of bird-friendly coffee, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm just seeing these birds on the ground, you know, scratching around at the feeders, and I'm just amazed that the power of survival, you know, just the life.
I think part of it's the freedom of flight.
Yeah.
You know, maybe sometimes in our dreams we fly, or our superheroes can fly. Mm-hmm. But to actually see a bird fly and go wherever it wants to within its environment, a similar thing occurs when people are snorkeling, because those fish can go anywhere they want. And
sure.
Then the diversity. There's so many different kinds. And if you do any travel for business or visit family or vacations, there's birds everywhere you go on Earth. And so those birds are just so fun to look at. I know a professor at Miami who had a young toddler, and they would put the toddler's little buggy up by the window, the stroller, so they could look at the bird feeder, and that child would be fascinated for hours.
Wow.
My mom had Alzheimer's, and I would take her out to look at birds, or I put a bird feeder right outside her window, and just looking at birds, I could tell it renewed her spirit. So birds have something going on that, you know, humans are attracted mm-hmm. to.
Indeed they do. I had a tweet from Jeremy. Is it okay to put both birdhouses and bat boxes up in my yard?
Sure. I can't think of any reason why they would have trouble interacting. Bats do not eat birds, and I know mm-hmm. of no diseases that interface between the two species.
All right, we're talking birds on Cincinnati Edition, 513-419-7100. Aaron from Springboro, you're next on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon. I've got a question about invasive honeysuckle. As if there's not enough to dislike about it, I heard during a Ohio Certified Volunteer Naturalist class from an ornithologist that if in the late afternoon before a really frigid night, birds fill up on the berries, they are like junk food for birds, and the caloric content is not enough to keep them going all night long. But those berries are very attractive, and with scarcity of other more calorie-dense natural foods, maybe birds are tempted to do that. And I thought this winter would certainly be the test of that theory. Do you guys know anything about that?
They're terrible. I mean, you know, bush honeysuckle is non-native invasive, as you said, and it's like raising your kid on potato chips, and that's all you give them. They're not a good food, and yet birds are amazingly tough. So, I'm not sure if it would kill them in one night, but there are certainly better native foods out there.
So another reason to get rid of that invasive honeysuckle.
Oh, yeah.
And a friend of mine did a study project at the Nature Center, and what he found was that birds seem to take native fruits before the honeysuckle. The honeysuckle seems to be the last fruit eaten in the season. So poison ivy was a favorite, poison ivy berries and Virginia creeper and other native fruits before the honeysuckle. So it's almost like, I don't want to say the birds know, but the quality of food is definitely lacking with the honeysuckle.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Aaron, for pointing that out. And as I said, another good reason to get rid of that invasive honeysuckle. We had someone who emailed in and said, is there a way to keep squirrels away from your birdseed? Now, I know it's like getting moles out of my yard where, you know, if you see how many ways there are to try to get rid of moles, you kind of know you're not going to get rid of moles. Is it the same thing with squirrels when it comes to bird feeder? Though I have seen some capsaicin powder that you put in bird seed that is supposed to help. Do any of these fixes work when it comes to fighting off the squirrels?
I've never tried that, but I know other people put cayenne pepper and so forth in their seed because, you know, the tender mucous membranes of the squirrel's mouth, I can see where that would be mm-hmm. a problem. The other thing is squirrel-proof feeders. There's kind of like the new mouse trap, but there's all sorts of squirrel-proof feeders out there. And then using baffles, and the 15-inch baffles usually don't work for the squirrels I know. But the 30-inch baffles that go on the pipe that, you know, keeps the squirrels from, you know, jumping up onto the feeders. All those...
And feeder placement is key. So if you can put your feeder away from a tree, and I don't know what the rule is. I think it might be 10 feet.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's 10 feet.
Those squirrels are very talented, though.
And I have a feeder like that in my yard. It's way away from my maple tree. But the other day, I noticed a squirrel had gone up into the canopy and was literally probably 20 feet above my feeder and dropped and landed on the top of the feeder and then slid off the roof and then hit the ground.
Oh, I hear tales from my mother all the time, who lives down in North Carolina, yeah, about her encounters with the squirrels and trying to keep them away. So, 513-419-7100, Talking Birds on Cincinnati Edition. Scott from Covington with a question. Hello, Scott.
Good afternoon. Quick question. I want to know if I'm doing the birds a favor by taking my, not stale, but because Wonder Bread doesn't turn stale, but taking out just loaves of bread and spreading it on the ground, or as opposed to the black oil seeds. That's it.
All right. All right. I don't know. Wonder Bread kind of raised some eyebrows here, but what about bread and bread crumbs? You know, you see them feeding the pigeons that all the time.
Well, I guess for pigeons, it's okay. bread is pretty much like potato chips, you know, for us. So it's not a good substitute for, you know, for the seeds or any natural food. So I wouldn't recommend it.
A lot of the city birds that we have that are adapted to humans, like the starlings and the house sparrows, they're incredibly adaptable birds, and they'll probably survive on Wonder Bread. But again, if you're trying to get a little bit more diversity and more of our native birds in, that black oil seed is much preferred. Yeah.
You mentioned pileated woodpeckers before. I'm fortunate enough to have at least two nesting pairs right around my house.
That's great.
And I hear them all summer long. I don't hear them as often in the winter. Do they kind of hibernate or migrate? I don't see them. So does that mean they just relocated somewhere?
Or? They're resident. I mean, they're around, and they can be very secretive. I mean, it's the largest woodpecker in North America, but when that bird doesn't want you to see it, it's you're not going to. So they can really quiet down in the wintertime.
But some people see more of them in the winter because there's no leaf cover. So the birds are there on the trees. You just have to get out and look for them.
Well, I'll have to keep my eye out.
Yeah.
Carol from Indiana saw a very large white bird being chased by a buzzard. Could it be a snowy owl, she asked. You talked about snowy owls a little bit earlier here. Lester, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this year it could be. I mean, we've seen, it's been documented, 139 snowy owls in 48 counties of Ohio.
And this is all because there's been sort of a population explosion and a lack of food. I believe there was a story on one of the NPR news programs I was talking about how these snowy owls that do usually live in the Arctic are coming south this year.
Yep, definitely. And what they're thinking is the owls in the eastern Arctic did really well this year. There's huge lemming population, and then there was a crash, and the birds dispersed. Most of the birds that come south, you know, have been documented as young birds, hatchier birds that hatch that summer. And they're thinking that the birds came out of the eastern Arctic because birds have been documented on Bermuda.
Hmm.
And there's been birds in, I believe, South Carolina. And then one was reported in Florida maybe just a couple weeks ago.
Those are the smart ones.
Yes.
The very smart ones.
Right. So if you're driving, I mean, it's snow covered now, but when the snow melts and if you're driving and you see a white blob speck out in the field because they're looking for wide open spaces, I encourage you to stop and, you know, see if it's a snowy owl.
Well, unfortunately, we have many more questions than we have time, and we have to wrap things up here. But thanks for being here today, guys.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.
We'll have to have you back in the warm weather months and attack the issues of bird watching during that season. Bill Creasy, Chief Naturalist and Adult Program Manager at the Cincinnati Nature Center. Lester Payton, Visitor Services Coordinator and a Naturalist at the Center. Talking about bird and bird watching, you can visit WVXU.org to learn more about the Cincinnati Nature Center and get some recommendations about reference books and more. And, you can learn quite a bit and have quite a bit of fun watching those birds. It was 77 years ago today that the river began to rise, and up and down the Ohio, communities were inundated with water. A look back at the flood of 1937 when Cincinnati Edition continues on 91.7 WVXU.